Welcome to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and I promise you, I guarantee you an hour of eco empowerment with punch today. Will April power bring May flowers? Esteemed author and leading thinker of our times, Bill McKibben, and one of my heroes, is joining us. He is hoping that Step It Up 2007 and a call to all of us to organize climate change rallies in our own communities this April will spur us on towards a springtime of creative solutions and, if not united optimism, then determination to face this mother of all challenges, and that, of course, is what to do about climate change. We'll also be joined this program by Rick Piltz. He's the former scientist with the U.S. Climate Change Program who resigned in 2005 due to the White House politics, the climate there, that undermined the program's very credibility. He'll tell us about leaving the public sector and about his comprehensive website, which you can find at climatesciencewatch.org. Finally, we all flip through home and architecture magazines and fantasize about how cool it would be to actually live in these artistic and modern buildings. Well, our friend Daniel Heinerfeld of the Natural Resources Defense Council reports today on his trip to check out the House of Our Dreams, the first residential building to receive a platinum rating from the U.S. Green Building Council. Don't want to delay anymore, because standing by from Sundance, Utah, where there's definitely a green theme this year, is our friend Bill McKibben. You just saw Everything's Cool, I understand, and that, of course, is the documentary that Judith Helfand and Daniel Gold just finished, probably right this morning. We talked to them about a week and a half ago, and they were still doing the finishing touches. How was it?
Well, aside from the somewhat disconcerting fact of seeing your own face, you know, 20
feet tall.
That's right.
You're the star. That's right.
It was, it's terrific. It's a, it's the absolute natural sequel to, you know, to An Inconvenient Truth, where that gave us the information that we needed, you know, to help people really understand what's going on. This gives people the ideas about how to communicate that, how to turn that information into political action. It's quite a funny and stunning and beautiful film, and I think people will leave the theater eager to go take action, which is badly what we need.
And did you have a special screening for those of you who were in the film, or was it public?
It was public. It was the first screening that it last night. I think they'd finished editing, you know, 45 minutes beforehand or something.
No kidding.
It was people greeted it with a standing ovation. It's really something.
Oh, fabulous.
And part of why it's so moving is because they follow the kind of arc of recent developments. When they started 4 years ago, you know, it was very hard for those of us who are working on this to get anyone to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, finally, post-Katrina, post-Al Gore, all of that, we're reaching the point where we can get people at least to pay attention. Now the question is getting them to take action. And, of course, that's what I've been moving on to in the last year or so.
So tell us about Step It Up 2007. It sounds like a great idea. Is it set for April because that's, you know, Earth Day month, when we tend to think about the environment, and I can't think of a better cause to rally people around this Earth Day month?
I think that that's definitely part of it. It's set for April 14th, in part because it's a kind of lead-in to Earth Week and Earth Day, and in part because this is when our Congress people are going to figure out whether they're going to do anything or not. And, you know, we have some beginnings of encouraging signs from Washington post-election, but, you know, the power of Exxon and the coal industry is as large as ever. And so we've decided that it really is time for some citizen political action.
Okay.
You know, I organized in August last year the largest demonstration ever held in this country on climate change. That was great, except that the number that it took to achieve that was a pathetic 1,000 people. We've now... That was in Vermont, where I live. We've decided to go try to do this nationally. We've set up a website 8 days ago, stepitup07.org, and invited people to come and start registering rallies in their hometowns and things. We're going to take all those when they happen on April 14th and combine them immediately electronically through YouTube and other things into a kind of national rally. That'll be greater than the sum of its parts. But, you know, we didn't know when we started if people would sign up or not. We were guessing people were ready to do this, and it turned out we were right. In the first 8 days, we've already got 146 rallies registered in 39 states. We have people who are, we have some of them in very iconic places. We have people who are going to be going underwater off the endangered coral reefs in Key West and Maui with banners. We have people climbing and then skiing down the dwindling glaciers in Wyoming and Montana. We also have lots of people who are going to be on their church steps and in their city hall parks and things. It's this StepItUp07.org thing is just catching on sort of virally, and it's quite amazing to watch. This is almost the first media I've even done about it, and I think as the word gets out, well, it's already going to be by far the largest climate change demonstration in the country, but I think it's turning into something quite enormous and quite beautiful.
Well, we're pleased, and we think it's appropriate that you talk to EcoTalk about it first, since we've been there along with you for about 10 years now, 3 years nationally, trying to get people, and all of a sudden people are listening. As I mentioned, I was with Al Gore at the Nashville training last week, and all day of Al Gore, and then it was on The Simpsons that night in my hotel room, and my program was talking about global warming. I had that Judith Helfand and Daniel Gold on that night, and the next morning the USA Today paper came outside my hotel door room, and it was how 05 or 06, one of those was the hottest year on record, and they were saying it's El Nino, but also climate change, and that was the first time that this group of climate scientists had acknowledged that climate change was impacting our weather. So it seems we have reached critical mass.
Absolutely.
So tell us about the actual demonstrations. It sounds like you're going to have quite a variety, so you're not telling folks what they should do, what they should say.
No, we're
it's really up to each locale.
When to do it, and we're agreeing on a sort of basic common message. 80% cuts in carbon by 2050. That's what we're asking out of Washington. It's the minimum really necessary to begin to make change, and we think it's quite possible. A number of senators have already endorsed legislation that goes in there, that takes those numbers as its base. This is the time, you know, we may not get President Bush to sign on to that. We may be laying the groundwork for what happens after President Bush is gone. But clearly something's in the air. You know, we have Mr. Obama and Mr. McCain and Mr. Edwards and
Barbara Boxer
and Mrs. Clinton. All the presidential candidates are doing their best to get out in front on this issue from all sides. And that's a sign, I think, that we really have done some of the work we need to do, and now we need to press that advantage home.
Do you think there's too much focus on the CAPS part of how to attack global warming with this batch of legislation?
I think the most important thing to happen in Washington is going to be sending a strong signal that we're serious about deep, long-term reductions. And I think exactly what form that signal takes is less important than getting across to people who have, you know, to sort of pools of investment capital, to people making plans for their corporations, even for people making plans to, you know, buy homes or buy cars, that the world is changing quickly away from a fossil fuel world. I think that if we send a strong enough signal, it will liberate some of the technological energy that needs to be liberated, and it'll also get people starting to figure out how to change their habits enough to take account of the fix that we're in. You know, I think it's an open question whether we've started in time to really, you know, carry the day or not. It would have been a lot better to do this, you know, 20 years ago. But as I can assure you from personal experience, 20 years ago, people weren't listening.
Even so, 2 years ago, they weren't listening, right?
We do. It's amazing what the change has been in the last 2 years even. And that's what this movie, Everything's Cool, really managed to capture in a way that no one else has yet, I think.
Pardon the expression, but it really seems like the perfect storm started with the series of devastating storms we had in 05, of course, Katrina, Wilma.
Katrina blew open the door, and Al Gore walked through it. And Al Gore and Laurie David and a lot of others who really brought it to a critical mass.
And we put you up there, too, in the list of short list of people who have really been trying to rally the slumbering masses, and it looks like they are starting to wake up and smell the carbon and do something about it. That's the next step. We're going to have to do a commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Bill McKibben, the author of some 10 books, including The End of Nature, The Age of Missing Information, and Enough, Staying Human in an Engineered Age. We'll continue our conversation with Bill right after these messages. And we're back with Bill McKibben. In addition to some of the books I mentioned before the break that he's written, he's also a former staff writer for The New Yorker, writing regularly still for Harper's, The Atlantic Monthly, The New York Review of Books, and also is a scholar in residence at Middlebury College, lives in Vermont with his wife, the writer Sue Halpern, as well as their daughter, who I know has inspired him. Your next book, Bill, will be coming out in March, I understand. It's called Economy, The Wealth of Communities, and The Durable Future. Just by the title, it looks like perhaps we have succeeded in moving, you know, what has been seen as an environmental issue. I assume some of this is about what's going on environmentally with global climate change, to tying it to economic, you know, causes and consequences, and health causes and consequences, and national security.
Absolutely. This book attempts to sort of look a few years ahead and try to imagine where we're going next, what the world after globalization will start to look like. I think that much of what's happened in the last 100 years has been the result of the easy availability of cheap fossil fuel. And if that world begins to change some, and it's already changing, we're going to see interesting things, including, I think, a return to somewhat more localized economies. We already see it in the number of people who are shopping at farmers markets and trying to eat closer to home, but the same thing may well be happening in energy, in even in arts and entertainment, and so on.
Sounds interesting, because we just had Hazel Henderson on, and her book, The Ethical Market, sounds like a similar topic, so it must be a concept whose time has come.
That's it, and you know, it's exciting to see, again, around the country, these ideas starting to catch on. It's why, in a sense, I feel even more urgency around global warming. I'm so sure that given, you know, 50 or 75 years, human beings will figure out more interesting ways to live on the planet than we are at the moment. The problem is that because of climate change, which is unlike all the other problems that we face in this sort of rapidity with which it's bearing down on us, because of that, we don't have 50 or 75 years. We've got to solve this problem much more quickly than that. And so, that's why, in a sense, reluctant activist though I am, I seem to be spending a lot more time these days organizing demonstrations than writing paragraphs.
Mm-hmm. I understand that reluctant activism part. Once you know too much, there's no going back, for better and worse, right? Well, you're certainly making the best of it. And speaking of activism, just have to comment about this death of environmentalism piece, which seemed to start a whole new era of consciousness and activism about environmentalism, of course, fueled by climate change concerns. But Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus may have done a service they didn't intend to do. Maybe you do have to kill something before you can rebirth it. We say that in application of the electric car history, you know, where they were crushing the last of them just as Wilmo was bearing down on Texas. And then guess what? Within months, there was talk of reviving the late great electric car.
Well, I just saw Ted last night. He is one of the stars of this new movie, Everything's Cool. And I think your take on it is, maybe just right. It's very good to see, as we're doing this step it up thing, the environmental movement sort of springing back into a more activist phase. And one of the coolest things about this stepitup07.org website is the way that it's attracting a mix of big environmental groups. You know, Sierra Club, NRDC, many others have jumped on board, Greenpeace, ready to help, but also very small groups, you know, Save the Meadow, wherever, and all kinds of people who've never organized anything before. That kind of mix is just what we need. We feel like we're throwing a party, and all kinds of interesting guests are showing up and getting to meet each other and build really interesting bridges.
I have to ask you something. Did you see the article in the Wall Street Journal? It must have been an editorial by someone who was criticized. Will Al Gore melt? Because I guess Al Gore canceled an interview that was supposed to take place in Copenhagen with Bjorn, what's his name, the anti-environmentalist?
Oh, Bjorn Lomborg, yes.
Yes, yes. And there was some criticism in this editorial that, you know, Al Gore is trying to change our economy, the way we do business. If we're really going to, you know, be taxing, you know, American jobs and changing the world, we really should challenge a lot of the things that Al Gore is putting forth. And Al had canceled that, not expecting it to be a debate. What do you think of that? I mean, are we just going to see people still trying to denounce the work that that Al Gore is bringing forward, but of course is backed up heavily by the best climate scientists in the world?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I just found out today that I'm debating Mr. Lomborg in May.
Good for you.
You know, frankly, I think that at least on these questions of global warming, you know, the era of denial is pretty much over. Part of me is reluctant even to engage in that kind of debate. And I think that if Al Gore is not doing it, it's only to avoid giving more credence than deserved to a very minority viewpoint. On the other hand, those of us, you know, a little less important than Gore in a way can probably manage to do that more easily without adding to their credibility anymore.
We just have about a minute left, and one of the quotes I got from hearing Al Gore last week for a day was, what do we do to stop that space between denial and despair from, you know, ever shrinking, growing smaller, almost invisible? He says, we block the exit. So it sounds like Step It Up 07 is one of the very critical ways in which we're blocking the exit, getting people to stop, think, take action, and really focus the nation on what is up for all of us and what we all must do yesterday to address this. So thanks for your terrific work, Bill McKibben.
Well, thanks for yours. We'll talk again as April approaches.
Terrific. And enjoy Sundance and have a great green time.
All right.
We'll be back right after the news break with more information on global warming and what's happening that's pretty darn exciting. Rick Piltz is up next.